The blackness enveloped them like a shroud, and for a few moments they slowed to a crawl, every inch preceded by a tentative footstep and a groping hand. Kilgore was the first to get out his penlight, followed by Goubert. The two thin beams from the lights cut through the darkness like lasers, but did little to illuminate the area in front of them. It was still slow going. Hopefully, their rate of progress would improve once their eyes grew accustomed to the dark. They reached the bottom of the stairs and came upon the entrance to the station. Kilgore shone his light across the darkness so he could make out the ticket booth, turnstiles, and newsstand. The newsstand was barren, no doubt picked clean by commuters after its owner left the city at the very onset of the virus. Like Skydome, the subway system was one of the worst, or best, depending on your point of view, places for the virus to spread. Every day, tens of thousands of people jammed into the subway cars, touching each other and breathing the same air over and over again. The Transit Commission eventually shut down the line, but by then it was too late. The subway was the city's main artery, and once that was fouled, it wasn't long until the very heart of the city was infected. As they passed through the turnstiles, Kilgore began to see a little better, able to make out rough shapes in the darkness. But as they stepped onto the northbound platform, they could see the reason for their improved visibility. At the north end of the platform, a single light set high up on the wall was flickering slightly, bathing part of the station in a twinkling glimmer of light. Seeing the light, Kilgore immediately turned off his penlight in order to save its batteries. A second later, Goubert did the same to his light. As they headed to the north end of the station, Kilgore could make out several people standing and a few others sitting on a bench. They were obviously braindeads, waiting for a subway that would never arrive. And yet, they all looked so patient, as if the train would be coming along at any moment.
Want to wait with them?
Kilgore smiled at that. Obviously, Goubert, maybe the doctor and Homer as well, were thinking the same thing he was. The braindeads looked so convincing that he was tempted to sit down and wait for the next train. They would get on it, ride it north, and get off at York Mills Station, where they would have a 2-minute walk to the entry gate. Easy. But of course, there was no train coming. They would be following the tracks north, but they'd be on foot. They neared the end of the platform. As they were caught in the glimmer of the flickering light, the braindeads all turned to look at them. The group was made up of an assortment of commuters, a couple of men in business suits, a secretary in a jacket and skirt wearing white socks and tennis shoes, a trio of laborers with dirty clothes and lunchboxes in their hands, and an elderly woman who looked as if she might be somebody's doting grandmother. Kilgore smiled at her. And in reply, the woman stepped forward, almost lunging at Kilgore. Homer moved between Kilgore and the woman, his bat cocked and ready to swing. But before he could follow through, Kilgore grabbed hold of the bat.
No.
Excuse me. No train is coming. I wait in here forever.
Kilgore was a little surprised by the woman's voice. She had some trouble putting sentences together, but she sounded so normal that it was hard to believe she was brain dead. But the longer he looked, the more her eyes gave her away. They were cloudy, almost devoid of any color, as if there were nothing behind them, which of course there wasn't.
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
The woman turned to the doctor.
Excuse me. No train is coming. I waited here forever.
The doctor shook her head. She moved on to Goubert, asking the same question, and then to Omar.
Sorry, no speak English.
The woman turned away from Omar and began speaking to no one in particular.
Excuse me. No train.
She continued on
talking,
reciting her lines as if they were a mantra. Finally, she returned to the other braindeads on the platform and began asking them.
Know if the train is coming?
No, I don't, but it better get here soon or my wife will have a fit.
She continued around the circle, asking each of them the same question. All answered politely with lines that sounded as if they'd been said 1,000 times over.
Creepy.
There's probably groups like this all over the city, but their days are numbered.
Oh, come.
Look at them. They're in perfect physical condition. All they need is a skull cap and a gun in their hand.
Right.
Of course, these were the preferred type of braindeads. It seemed unfair that the most harmless braindeads would become the most deadly, but after the horror of the virus, what could possibly be fair?
You want I kill them now?
No.
Even though he knew it would probably be prudent to kill them now, they were so harmless that he couldn't bring himself to allow it. After all, there were still so many braindeads on the street, it was unlikely that they'd search subway stations for potential soldiers. And who knew? Maybe a train would come along someday.
Leave them. Save your strength for when we really need it. All right, let's go. Down onto the tracks.
And watch out for the third rail.
The third rail was probably dead, since, save for the odd light here and there, much of the subway system seemed to be without electricity. And even though you couldn't get a shock unless you touched the third rail and one of the other steel rails at the same time, it was still a good idea to be wary of it. They'd found enough buildings inside supposedly blacked-out city blocks to be wary of everything electrical. Since they could never be sure what was live and what wasn't, it made sense to treat every wire as if it carried electricity. Kilgore pulled out his penlight, turned it on, and shone it down into the tunnel. The light pierced the darkness, casting faint shadows and making the tunnel look like the open maw of some great ravenous beast. Goubert's penlight clicked on, and together they stepped into the tunnel, into the belly of the beast.
Careful where you step. There are all sorts of ruts in the ground and bolts sticking out all over the place.
Goubert tripped, and the line of his penlight cut wildly through the darkness.
Now you tell me.
Maybe we should move in closer together, at least until we have some light.
Okay.
A moment later, he could feel the doctor's hands around his waist, then the gentle press of her body against his. It was a good feeling, one he hadn't experienced in months. He knew it was odd that the place he'd feel the first warm inklings of affection flow through his body would be in the dark underneath the city while being pursued by braindeads, but he wasn't complaining. Besides, the world was so screwed up at the moment, perhaps it was only right for it to come to him in just such a situation. They walked along a gentle right curve in the subway line, and when the track straightened out, there was a faint light, more like a glow than a light, at the end of the tunnel.
That would be the Lawrence station.
Which means we're close, yes?
Yes. The stop after that one is York Mills, which is where we get off. Or perhaps I should say, get out.
You think they'll be waiting for us at the York Mills station?
Kilgore's mood suddenly darkened. Of course he'd thought the same thing, but had wishfully, or perhaps foolishly, chosen to ignore the possibility. They had been through so much, and they were making such good progress that it seemed sacrilege to think something horrible awaited them. But Kilgore was experienced enough to know that thinking good thoughts wouldn't play a role in their success, and he was ready to face the facts.
That's what I'd be doing if I were them.
So you think we should go above ground at Lawrence and then make our way to the entry gate through the back streets or up to Don River Valley?
The river was a possibility. It snaked its way down to the lake and actually intersected with Highway 401, very close to Yonge Street and the entry gate. Unfortunately, it cut across Yonge at the York Mills intersection, meaning they would still have to take Yonge Street to travel a kilometer or so from between the Yonge-York Mills intersection to the highway. It wouldn't be their first choice, but it was an option to keep in mind.
No, if they're keeping an eye on York Mills Station, then they've probably got braindeads positioned around the Lawrence Station, too. If we're gonna fight them, we might as well do it closest to our ultimate destination.
Kilgore waited for Goubert to argue the point, or make another suggestion, but he didn't. Instead, he nodded his head and kept moving forward. Kilgore almost wished Goubert had questioned him, since it would have put his plan to some sort of test. He hadn't made a wrong decision yet on this reclamation, but there was always a first time.
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Voices. That way.
The group stopped where they stood, and Kilgore looked in the direction Homer indicated with his bat. Realizing he couldn't see anything, he turned his head to the side and listened carefully for a sound. There were voices, or at least some sort of sound, coming from somewhere off to the left. It might have been some braindeads, since some of them were able to speak, but considering they were underground and away from the hordes, there was an excellent chance that the voices were those of survivors living beneath the city. Kilgore took out his penlight, pointed it in the direction the voices seemed to be coming, and turned on the light. The sliver of light traveled several meters before hitting a wall in the form of a thin white line running along a corridor that was perpendicular to the subway line. It was obviously a maintenance corridor of some sort that gave subway workers access to other parts of the line. He centered the beam of light down the middle of the corridor and saw four or five figures walking toward them. They wore coveralls and hard hats, all emblazoned with the Transit Commission's familiar winged TTC logo. The figures were stumbling slightly, obviously braindead, but still to be considered dangerous. Although they likely spent their days reflexively doing maintenance work on the line, they probably wouldn't react too kindly to survivors being within their domain. If they caught Kilgore and the others down here, the braindeads might detain them while they tried to notify the authorities. That's where the chain would break down, and as a result, Kilgore and company would be held prisoner in the tunnel forever. Best to avoid the situation altogether.
Spread out, and keep out of sight.
Immediately, the other three broke away and moved to the sides of the tunnel. Kilgore took a look around and couldn't see any of them in the darkness. Hopefully, neither would the Braindeads. Kilgore crouched down behind a pillar and tried to slow his breathing. They wouldn't see him, but they still might hear him. As they approached, Kilgore could make out 7 Braindeads in all. The most curious thing about them was they were all walking in single file with their right hands in constant contact with one of the walls. Were they blind, he wondered? Or was that the easiest way to move around in the dark? At that moment, it sounded like a man sneeze, but Kilgore couldn't be sure. That meant it was either Goober, Homer, or one of the 7 Braindeads. Regardless of who had sneezed, the Braindeads all stopped moving and turned around expectantly, as if waiting for another sneeze or some other sound. There was none. Kilgore remained crouched and silent. A bead of sweat ran down his nose and dangled precariously from its tip. He dared not wipe it away. After a few more tense seconds, the Braindeads began to move once more, shuffling southward down the tunnel. Kilgore waited until they were out of earshot.
Huddle up!
He moved to the center of the tunnel and waited for the others to gather around him. Seconds later, there was the familiar press of bodies against his, and together they all moved toward the light. As they walked in unison, it became apparent that one of them was having trouble keeping up.
Look alive there, Doc.
Why do you think it's me?
Sorry. How about you, Goob?
I'm fine.
Homer?
I'm good.
They all stopped dead in their tracks and turned to face each other. In the middle of the group was a Braindead, one of the transit workers they'd thought they'd left behind. It wasn't clear what the Braindead had been doing in their midst, but it was likely that it had gotten disoriented back in the tunnel and hooked up with the wrong group once things started moving again. Goober's penlight flashed up in the Braindead's face. The face was filthy with grease and grit, so much so that they couldn't tell if the Braindead's original skin color had been black or white. But most curious of all was the thing's eyes. They were milky white and severely sunk back into their sockets. It was blind, and obviously had chosen to remain underground rather than topside, where its condition would have been a severe disability. Apparently, the Braindeads they'd passed hadn't been transit workers, but blind Braindeads who had put on whatever clothes they'd found along the subway line. Kilgore glanced over at the doctor. Even in the dark, it was obvious from what little he could discern that she was fascinated by the adaptability of the creatures. Their ingenuity was almost human in nature, which meant that there was perhaps more to Braindeads than what they'd originally been given credit for. It would be nice to study these creatures in greater depth, but unfortunately there was still a little matter of survival to be dealt with first.
You want me to kill it?
No.
Kilgore shook his head, but even as he did, a look of fear tore across the Braindead's white eyes and grimy face.
What's wrong?
The Braindead remained still, as if listening. Slowly, its right hand rose up and pointed past Kilgore in the direction of the next station. Then, as quick as it could, turned and shuffled off, its right hand in constant contact with the wall.
Weird.
Kilgore was about to agree, when his words were cut off by the sound of hardwood crunching bone. He turned around, and in the glow of the faint light coming from the end of the tunnel, he could see the silhouettes of Braindeads entering the tunnel. He could also make out the outline of Omar swinging his bat left and right. Kilgore leapt to Homer's side. In seconds, the tunnel was filled with both Braindeads and dead brains. Kilgore joined in the fight, as did Goober and the Doctor. Kilgore was getting better at hitting his targets, but he still wasn't anywhere near to matching Homer's sweet, sweet swing. The young Dominican was swinging freely, as if he were simply taking batting practice, and clearing a wide swath through the encroaching crowd of Braindeads. Soon, the first rush of Braindeads had been taken care of, and they had a chance to catch their breath.
Do you think they were sent for us?
No, none of them had skull caps, and they weren't armed. My guess is that one of them heard something in the tunnel, and a few others followed it in.
Well, come the ones in the other station didn't attack us then?
It has to do with numbers. There were only a handful of Braindeads in the Eglinton station, so the chances that there were dangerously violent Braindeads among them was pretty small. But this station is quite full, so it stands to reason that there would be a dozen or more Braindeads bent on killing survivors here.
Kilgore turned to look into Lawrence Station. They were about 20 yards from the entrance now, and the station's platform appeared to be teeming with Braindeads. It was as if the virus had swept through during rush hour and they'd all been trapped inside the station.
There will be more, won't there?
The doctor turned to look at him. The light from the station was fairly bright now, enough to allow Kilgore to clearly see her face. Her features seemed to have aged a dozen years since yesterday. In addition to that, for the first time since they entered the city, she looked worried.
Yes. There will be more.
How many?
In any large group of brain deads, usually half will be harmless and half will be dangerous.
Sounds about right.
It means we have to fight 50 Muertos de la Cabeza just to get to the other end of the station?
Maybe more.
Madre de Dios.
We don't have to fight them.
How do you figure?
There's a lip to the platform. It hangs over the rail by a few feet. Maybe we can travel under it without any of them noticing us.
He paused, waiting for them to all chime in support of the plan, but no one said a word. Kilgore looked at them all in turn. They appeared weary from hours on the run, from the highs and lows of making headway and suffering setbacks. All they had to do was hang in for a little while longer, but Kilgore honestly didn't know if they had it in them. And by them, he meant himself as well. Goubert was the first to finally speak up.
They might smell us.
Maybe, but we've been among the brain deads long enough for their smell to have rubbed off on us. Those first brain deads heard us, so maybe if we're quiet enough, we can sneak through without being noticed.
I don't like sneaking around. I didn't like it in Angola, and I especially don't like it now.
I don't like it any more than you do. I'd like nothing better than to march in with an M16 and sweep the platform clean, but...
I hear ya.
If they tried to work their way through the crowd, they'd likely attract the attention of all the braindeads on the platform, and there were just too many, and the space too confined for them to fight their way past them. They had to go through the station and take their chances at the next one up the line, York Mills Station. If they found it crowded there, then they could keep heading north to the Shepherd Station, which was on the other side of the highway, outside of the city. He thought about it a moment and realized that the subway tunnel was likely blocked between the York Mills and Shepherd stations, just like the above ground route. York Mills would be the end of the line.
Then let's do it.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it.
He crouched down and slowly began crawling into the station. Into the open. Kilgore led the way, squatting low to the ground and doing a sort of duck walk while he stayed as close as possible to the wall on the right. If they were lucky, the overhanging lip of the platform would be enough to conceal their presence until they got to the other end of the station. He took a few quick steps, then looked over his shoulder at the others. The doctor was crawling along on all fours, followed by Homer, who was squatting like Kilgore but using his bat like a cane to keep his balance. Goubert brought up the rear, his eyes constantly looking up at the edge of the lip for braindeads. Confident they could make it undetected, Kilgore picked up the pace, covering several meters with just a few strides. The increased effort was tiring, and for the first time since they entered the city, he felt his body starting to ache. Parts of his legs felt like they were on fire as oxygen-starved muscles began to complain. He took a few more steps, then looked back again. The doctor seemed to be struggling. Her knees were probably taking a beating, the skin on them rubbed raw. As he watched, she reached for the rail with her left hand, misjudged its location, and stumbled. Behind her, Homer continued at his normal pace. He saw the doctor had stumbled, tried to stop, but still bumped into her. The doctor kept her balance, and Homer managed to recover, but his baseball bat slipped from his hands and the thick end of it banged against the right rail, ringing it like a bell. None of them moved. The ringing rail's song died out and the station was once again silent. Goubert's eyes scanned the air above them for movement, but there was none. Kilgore breathed a sigh. Just then... On the southbound platform, a braindead was pointing directly at them.
So much for sneaking around.
Run for it!
In seconds, they were all running north toward the big black hole at the far end of the platform. The braindeads followed along the platform, but were too slow to catch them. If they could keep up the pace, they'd make it to the tunnel and be safe, at least for a little while. Kilgore looked over his shoulder to check on the others. The doctor had fallen slightly behind and was now being helped along by Goubert. Just a few more meters to go. Kilgore picked up his pace for a moment, only to slow again when he saw a group of braindeads appear at the end of the platform. They were streaming down a stairway into the station and gathering near the tunnel entrance like a gang preparing for a street fight.
Oh, shit.
One by one, the braindeads dropped down onto the tracks and started walking toward them. Kilgore stopped running and turned around, looking for a better escape route. There wasn't one. A few of the braindeads on the platform had also dropped down onto the tracks and were now approaching from the south. Meanwhile, more braindeads were entering the station, filling up the platform and completing the circle around them.
What do we do now?
I don't know. I was hoping you had an idea.
Sorry, man.
Kilgore twisted around and saw Homer running north on the tracks toward the braindeads in front of the tunnel entrance. He had his bat held high and was running like he was shagging down a long fly ball. When he reached the lead braindead, the bat whipped around and crunched into the thing's skull. The braindead's head jerked to the left, taking its body with it and landing like a duffel bag tossed across the tracks. One down, eight to go. Homer wasted little time repositioning his bat. Instead of cocking it again over his right shoulder, he merely switched his grip and swung again, this time catching a braindead in the neck, breaking it. The braindead remained standing, but its head lolled uselessly on its shoulders. Whatever instructions the thing was receiving from the skull cap in its head were now scrambled, and it wandered aimlessly in circles, releasing all of its body waste as it walked. Two down, seven to go. Homer was ready to take out another one when one of the braindeads managed to get around behind him and grab hold of his bat. Instead of pulling on the bat, Homer pushed it, ramming the thick wooden end into the thing's face. The bat punched a hole through the rotten flesh and bone of its cheek, but the braindead refused to let go. Kilgore managed to work his way up to Homer's side and took the braindead out with a hard strike under the braindead's left ear.
Gracias.
Don't mention it.
There were more braindeads now, as many behind them as in front, and for every one they managed to knock down, two more dropped off the platform onto the track. For a moment, Kilgore felt it was hopeless. They were so outnumbered now that even if they had their guns and several clips of ammunition, they wouldn't be able to shoot their way out. Kilgore ran a hand over his vest and felt the familiar bulge of the hand grenade Captain Madden had given him earlier in the day. If he used it now, it would clear their way. But in addition to killing a few dozen braindead, it might also take out a few in their party. And who knew what effect an explosion might have on the ceiling above them? He pulled his hand away from the grenade and continued the fight. There were even more braindeads now than there were a few seconds ago. His arms ached. The bat felt like a dead weight in his hands. And still, they kept coming. He raised the bat once more and brought it down onto the forehead of an approaching braindead. The braindead staggered, then resumed its offensive. Kilgore hit it again, and once more the braindead staggered, but never strayed from its plan of attack. As it neared him again, Kilgore tightened the grip of his bat and swung it as hard as he could. The bat caught the braindead on the side of the head and sent it reeling to the left. It stumbled a few times, then finally fell to the ground. And then, a miracle happened. The braindead's right hand grabbed at the third rail as its body fell across the tracks. Sparks began to fly. Smoke rose up from the tracks and the smell of ozone filled the air. The fallen braindead was on fire, its old and brittle clothing burning like a torch. In seconds, the flames had spread to the others. Braindeads walked the tracks, their bodies alight with bright orange and yellow flame. Even the braindeads on the platform were catching fire, walking aimlessly about until they stumbled off the edge and fell flaming onto the tracks. The smoke was starting to choke them. In front of them, several braindeads had fallen across the third rail, their bodies shaking and smoldering for a few seconds before erupting into flames.
Follow me!
He leaped over the burning bodies, the flames licking at his legs, then ran hard toward the north end of the station. When he reached the tunnel, he turned around and saw the Doctor, Homer, and Goubert appearing out of the ever-thickening clouds of gray-black smoke.
Is everyone okay?
Yeah.
Si.
Yes.
All right then, just one more stop to go.
You say it like all we have to do is get there.
Well, we can't go back that way.
And the next stop on the line is going to be as full of braindeads as this one was.
We're trapped?
Kilgore shook his head to say no. He opened his mouth to explain, but couldn't come up with the words that would contradict the ballplayer's statement. As much as he hated to admit it, the situation seemed more hopeless now than ever before. The smoke continued to fill the tunnel. The party simply started to move away from the smoke at first, but then began walking with some sense of purpose and direction as they headed toward the next station.
Maybe there's a way out of the tunnel before we reach York Mill Station.
You mean like a service entrance?
Yeah. Or maybe there's an air vent or something between the stations. Aren't there vents all over the city that let the air flow out of the tunnels?
Sure there are. I remember floating empty pop cans over the vents outside Toronto City Hall when I was a kid.
I did that too.
All right then. Let's find a vent.
Kilgore realized that it was easier said than done. The fires burning in the subway station had provided a bit of light inside the tunnel, but now the smoke had turned that light source into a dull, dim glow. He had also hoped that some light from above would have shone down into the tunnel, but obviously that wasn't going to happen. It was either dark outside or there wasn't an overhead vent in this portion of the tunnel. Kilgore felt his hopes diminishing once again, but kept the feeling to himself. The smell of smoke and burning flesh was getting stronger, stinging their eyes and choking off what little light filtered into the tunnel.
Goubert, your pen light still working?
No, let me check.
Kilgore could hear Goubert rifling through his pockets. Then after a moment of silence, the familiar click of the pen light. There was a point of light around Goubert's hand and a faint glow shining up against the tunnel walls.
How's that?
Kilgore took his own pen light from his pocket and turned it on. His wasn't shining any brighter than Goubert's, but it was enough for them to find their way.
Hey, look at that!
Look at what?
The smoke!
Kilgore gazed at the doctor's pointing finger.
What am I looking at?
The smoke. It's being carried along.
At last, Kilgore noticed the wisps of smoke streaming around the doctor's hand. They were long, thin lines in the air, moving northward with a purpose. The smoke was heading somewhere, rather than simply being pushed by more billowing smoke from behind.
It is showing us the way.
Yes.
A vent somewhere up ahead is drawing the smoke toward it. All we have to do is follow the smoke and it will lead us to the outside.
As long as we don't choke to death on the smoke before we make it out of the tunnel.
Thank you very much for pointing that out, Doctor.
Sorry.
They followed the smoke. Several times they lost track of it and had to stop to find the direction the gray tendrils were heading. It cost them dearly as each time they had to stop it allowed the smoke to get thicker, making it all the more difficult to breathe.
We must be getting close. The smoke is starting to...
He stopped his words short as his pen light suddenly winked out, cutting their amount of light in half. They all huddled closer to Goubert's pen light and concentrated on the meandering line of smoke. They'd walked what seemed like 100 or more meters before the smoke started to slowly drift to the right. Goubert's pen light started to flicker and dim.
No, not now.
As if in response to his pleas, the light seemed to rejuvenate itself and shone brighter than it had since they'd first entered the tunnel. They followed the smoke a few more steps until it seemed to be sucked into the wall.
This must be it.
I don't see anything like a vent.
Goubert's pen light quickly dimmed, and a second later, the light was gone.
And now I don't see anything at all.
It has to be here. The smoke wouldn't travel this way if there wasn't air flowing through this point.
The tunnel was silent. The smoke was getting thicker with each passing second. If they didn't get out in the next few minutes, they would likely die where they stood of smoke inhalation. Kilgore could feel the sweat starting to bubble up on his skin. He hadn't come this far to die like a sewer rat. But the funny thing was, he didn't care so much about his own life as he did about the thousands of others who would die if they didn't make it out of this tunnel. If they failed, whatever was left of the human race would probably be gone in a year. He took a breath, held it for a moment, and tapped his boot against the wall. Instead of the solid thud of concrete, there was a tinny metallic sort of sound.
Homer? Take a swing at the wall.
Where?
Anywhere in front of you.
Homer felt the wall with his hand, took a step backward, and swung his bat with everything he had. Light suddenly pierced the darkness. Homer had knocked a large metal louver out of the vent. They hadn't been able to see it because it was set flush into the wall and was covered with the same grime as the rest of the tunnel walls. But now, with one of the louvers gone, they could easily make out the details of the vent. It was roughly a meter square, with four wide horizontal louvers covering the opening. They were all spring-loaded, opening up as a train passed to allow the air to escape, but staying closed tight at other times to keep air and small animals out. Homer struck at the louver again, the metal edges cutting his bat into kindling. In minutes, there was a wide enough space for them to squeeze through, and then it was a short crawl to a metal grill which Goubert and Kilgore easily got rid of with a few swift kicks of their boot heels. And then they were standing in knee-high grass, looking out over the Don River Valley. Yonge Street was just above them, and the entry gate was less than a half kilometer away.
Do you want to follow the valley to the highway?
No, not all the way to the highway. We'll use it to get past the station. Once we're on the other side, we can get onto Yonge Street. If we're lucky, we'll be less than 100 meters to the entry gate when we do.
Smoke was beginning to billow out of the vent in earnest, sending a gray cloud into the air and drawing attention to their location.
We better start moving.
One by one, they moved down the bank toward the river's edge. When they reached the river, they turned north, keeping Lo to remain hidden by the overgrown grass and weeds lining the river valley.
Think they'll figure out where we are?
Maybe, maybe not. One thing's for sure, though.
What's that?
Once the smoke reaches York Mill Station, there's going to be a lot of brain deads out on the street.
Always looking on the bright side, aren't you, Kilgore?
They made their way through the grass and weeds, following the river under Yonge Street and emerging on the northwest side of the intersection.
So far, so good.
Don't speak so soon.
Look!
Shite.
Kilgore stopped and looked up. A group of about 6 brain deads were standing on the river's edge in front of them. They wore ragged clothes, their hair was long and dirty, and all the men had thick gray-brown beards. Behind the brain deads were makeshift tents and piles of boxes. Obviously, these were homeless people who had been camping out by the river before the virus and had remained thereafter. Looking at them, Kilgore couldn't help but feel that the virus had made little difference in their lives. They existed now just as they had before. Who knows, maybe their lives were even better now since they didn't have the mental capacity to dwell on their misery.
Okay, this is as far as we go.
We could take them out and get by them.
I know we can, but I don't want to.
Why not?
This is their home. They don't want any trouble.
We're on the north side of the station. We'll get onto Yonge Street from here, then hightail it to the entry gate.
All right.
Let's go.
They climbed up the bank toward Yonge, remaining crouched behind a guardrail as they surveyed the scene. Yonge Street sloped upward toward the entry gate about 200 meters to the north. Glass and steel office buildings lined the east side of the street, and the sidewalks were cracked and overgrown with weeds. On the southeast corner, there was a gas station, and behind that stood a church. On the northwest and southeast corners in the intersection of Yonge and York Mills Road, the entrances to York Mills Station were beginning to smoke. Not surprisingly, there were plenty of braindeads aimlessly wandering the street. Several of them sported skullcaps and carried guns, but most of them appeared unsure how to use them. Perhaps the braindeads were too far away from their broadcast source to be an effective fighting force. Speaking of effective fighting forces, Kilgore looked back up Yonge Street. Their party had been gone for hours and were way overdue back at the entry gate. By rights, army personnel should have been out searching for them, or at least they could have gathered on the highway bridge over Yonge watching for their approach. But there was no one there. Kilgore knew the army was in bad shape, but he had no idea things were this bad. Suddenly, there was movement to the north. A vehicle turned onto Yonge from a street on the east side. It looked to be a military vehicle, a pickup truck painted in a mottled camouflage pattern. Goubert saw the truck as well. He stood up and waved his arms.
The cavalry has arrived!
Goubert, get down!
Too late. Goubert fell to the ground, his body crumpling like a sheet that had fallen off a line.
No!
Goubert was lying on the road, moaning in pain. Blood was pooling under his body and beginning to trickle down the street. If he didn't get help, he'd bleed to death in minutes. The truck kept coming, gaining speed as it approached.
Oh my God!
The realization of what was about to happen hit Kilgore at the same moment. There was a braindead standing up in the back of the truck with a gun, and there was another braindead behind the wheel guiding the truck straight for Goubert, obviously intent on running him over. Kilgore couldn't let that happen. He'd already lost one of his men on this reclamation. He wasn't about to lose another.
No!
The braindead remained on course, heading straight for Goubert. Shots rang out, and Kilgore could feel bits of asphalt striking him as the bullet slammed into the street in front of him. He grabbed Goubert by the collar and began to pull him out of the truck's way. But Goubert was too heavy, or perhaps Kilgore was too weak. Whatever the reason, he could hardly move Goubert's prone body quick enough to get it out of the way. He tried lifting him again, and this time the body weighed considerably less. It was only then that Kilgore noticed that Homer and the doctor had come to his aid. Seeing that they were moving Goubert well enough on their own, Kilgore concentrated on the braindeads in the truck, in the hopes of drawing their fire away from the others. He would have liked to have taken the truck from the braindeads and drive the rest of the way to the entry gate, but it didn't look as if that was going to happen. The best he could hope for was to distract them long enough so that Goubert and the others could get to safety. That part of the plan seemed to be working. The truck was barreling down on him at an ever-increasing speed. Maybe I can use that to my advantage, thought Kilgore. He felt his vest for the grenade. Now was the time to use it. He continued to move right and left, too fast for the braindead with the gun to take proper aim. He remained still for several final seconds, hearing bullets whiz and whir past his ears. Then when the truck was upon him, he leaped to the right, almost getting out of its way. His left foot was caught by the truck's rear bumper, tearing his boot off and breaking several bones in his foot. Despite the pain, he stood up, pulled the pin from the grenade, and lobbed it into the back of the pickup. The brain dead with the gun was trying to get around to fire at him, but without the benefit of his arms on top of the truck's cab, he was having trouble staying on his feet. At the same time, the brain dead driving the truck was slowing down, intent on turning around and taking another run at him. Hopefully, thought Kilgore, he wouldn't have the chance. Kilgore fell to the street and waited for the truck to blow. It was a long wait, and for a few tense moments, Kilgore thought that Madden had given him a dud. But at last, the grenade went off, tearing the truck apart and setting its fuel on fire. The truck began a slow roll down the street, drifting off to the left toward the gas station.
Cover up!
The explosion shook the ground. Kilgore's closed eyes sensed a big bright light and then felt the shock of the blast. His ears were ringing and he felt the heat against his skin and clothes, as hot as an oven. At last he looked. There were burning brain dead everywhere. Those that weren't on fire were running from the flames. Lines of fire were burning across Yonge Street and York Mills Road. There wouldn't be any brain dead coming from that direction in the next little while. Maybe, just maybe, they were going to make it after all. Kilgore struggled to his feet. Pain shot up through his smashed foot and he fell to his knees. He tried it again, this time using his bat as a sort of cane to relieve the pressure on his foot.
How is he?
I've stopped the bleeding for now, but I need to work on him soon if he's going to have a chance.
There's an ambulance on the other side of the entry gate.
I can make it.
I know you can, buddy. It's just up that hill.
I'll make it.
Homer?
The ball player quickly went to Goubert's side.
Here, use this one too.
He handed his bat to Kilgore so he could support his weight with both hands.
Thanks.
The doctor and Homer lifted Goubert off the ground.
Easy.
No. Hurry up.
You heard the man. Let's go.
They turned toward the entry gate, only to see a lone, dark figure standing at the top of the hill.
Now what?
The dark figure approached. Kilgore tightened his grip on each of the bats in his hands and wondered how well he could wield them on one good foot. He was exhausted and in considerable pain, but he wasn't about to let one lousy brain dead keep him from completing his mission.
Just keep moving. I'll take care of this one.
Kilgore began to move forward, hobbling along on his broken foot in a pair of splintered baseball bats. At the very least, maybe he could distract the brain dead long enough to let the others get by. If they could get close enough to the entry gate, surely Corporal Skvorecki or whoever was on duty would come to their aid.
Come on! Come and get me, you damn stupid bastard! I'll go through you if I have to!
Even though his rant was probably lost on the brain dead, the words helped give Kilgore courage in the face of what was probably his final fight, like whistling through a graveyard after midnight.
Your useless brains are going to be splattered all over the pavement by the time I'm done with you!
He was nearly there. He dropped one of the bats and grabbed the other with both hands while desperately trying to keep the weight off his broken right foot. He stumbled a few more steps, then stopped in his tracks.
I don't believe it.
He lowered the bat and used it to keep himself upright.
We gave you up for dead hours ago.
I never thought I'd say this, but I'm really glad to see you, Madden.
The captain didn't answer. Instead, he went to Goubert's aid, relieving the doctor and Homer of their burden, taking the wounded man onto his shoulders and carrying him up the hill to the entry gate. The doctor was no more than a step behind them. Kilgore resumed his slow walk up Yonge Street. The entry gate was about 50 meters away. With luck, he'd be there in a few minutes. Homer came around and put himself under Kilgore's right shoulder, helping to take the weight off his mangled foot. Maybe less. Part 3. Vocation. Kilgore lay back on one of the cots inside the trailer under the 401. He had taken the cigars he'd picked up for Corporal Skvorecki from inside his vest and was enjoying one of them with the corporal.
These are great.
Nothing but the best for you, my friend.
I owe you one.
You got that right.
Just then the door to the trailer opened up and Captain Madden entered, followed by the doctor.
How's Goober?
He'll live.
He's resting right now. When he wakes up tomorrow, he's going to be in a lot of pain.
But he'll make it, right?
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, what about you?
Just some rest for a few days.
The doctor touched his ankle.
Ah!
Rest alone isn't going to do it, Kilgore. It's going to have to be set in a cast for a few weeks.
Good. That'll give us plenty of time to talk.
About what?
About what you saw inside the city, for one.
Madden pulled up a chair next to Kilgore's cot.
It was hell.
The doctor told me about some of what you saw inside. We had been monitoring the radio transmissions for a while, but we didn't know what to make of them other than a fouled-up transmission tower somewhere in the city.
Really checked it out, eh, Madden?
To be honest, Kilgore, when you're trying to maintain a perimeter with no soldiers, old equipment, and a less than appreciative civilian population, garbled radio transmissions aren't exactly a high priority.
Kilgore fell silent a moment, thinking.
Tell me something.
What?
That offer you mentioned to me before we went in. Is it still good?
You want to rejoin the army? What the hell happened to you in there?
Yeah, I want to rejoin.
What changed your mind?
I guess I realized that there's a lot more at stake here than just looking out for number one.
That's the way most of us feel.
And thank God for that.
There was a feeling of togetherness in the room, a feeling Kilgore hadn't known since his family had been lost to the virus.
One thing, though.
What?
I don't do well following orders.
So I've noticed.
I want to be in charge of my own squad. What's so funny?
It sounds as if you want my job.
Basically, yeah.
It would give you the chance to oversee the inoculation of the survivors.
Madden considered it for a while, then looked at Kilgore and smiled.
Okay. It's yours if you want it, pal.
Yeah. I want it.
Epilogue. A New Beginning.
They got away.
They'll be back.
But they'll know what to expect next time.
I doubt it.
How can you be so sure?
The second man raised a hand and placed it on an old battered doorknob. He turned it, opening a similarly scarred door to reveal an expansive factory floor, teeming with machinery. Everything from drill presses and industrial stampers to steel forges and injection molders.
What is all that?
It will be my zombie mill.
Your what?
My zombie mill. When it is operational, it will take brain deads in at one end and turn out fully functional soldiers at the other. The next time a reclaimer enters my city, it will be the last.
And after you take control of the city, then what?
Well, what else? The world.
Kilgore and Company by Ido Van Belkom is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2021 Ido Van Belkom, all rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the licensor. Production copyright 2021 Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Steve Winall. With performances by Stephen Carpenter as Kilgore, Laura C. Harris as Dr. Stark, Stefan Walker as Goubert, Rob Moreira as California, and Alejandro Ruiz as Omar. Also with Rob McFadgen, Richard Rowan, Eric Mesner, Bradley Smith, Dawn Ursula, Matthew Pauly, and John Kielty. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Steve Winall. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Robert McDonald and Grayson Holland. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producer, Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Kilgore & Company, you may also enjoy Deathlands by James Axler or Clockwork Century by Sherry Priest. These titles and many more are available in Graphic Audio. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in Graphic Audio.
This message will repeat every 15 minutes. This is a recorded message from the Safe Haven Radio Network. The human race is fighting for its life. The dead have risen and will attack any human. Humans need to band together to keep alive. Join us at Safe Haven so we can all protect ourselves and take back our planet.
From Graphic Audio and Caliber Comics comes the return of the original zombie comic, Dead World, by Gary Reed.
The world is dying. Some say it was bacterial mutation from a scientific test that went astray. Others say it was a military experiment gone wrong. We've also had reports that it was some type of supernatural plague from another world or dimension. Whatever the cause, the results are the same. The human race is heading towards extinction.
A group of teens are on the run from an army of the living dead, and the zombie king, a walking and talking nightmare on a Harley who hungers for two things. The knowledge to open a gate to the realm of death.
You and me, Mr. Priestman, we know the truth. Life's a bitch and then you die.
You can talk? What are you?
The future and human flesh. No, no, no! What extremes will humanity go to stop the zombie plague?
You can't be serious. You're running tests on... What kind of people are you?
Morals and ethics from yesterday's world mean nothing anymore. We're in a race against extinction. Human extinction.
No rationality can justify this.
Now available in Ghoulish Graphic Audio.
It may be mankind's only hope. This message will repeat every 15 minutes.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series, from sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.